that, oh shit, this is the suckiest summary ever.
We're totally keeping that part in.
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
So welcome to episode 12 of the Rogue Startups Podcast. How you doing this week, Craig?
I'm doing great, Dave. Business is good and moving forward. Got a couple new potential customers for Podcast Motor, so it's continuing to grow and feeling good about it.
Awesome. Love to hear that. Love to hear that. In Support Vine land, I hired a new Java developer late last week, so I'm excited to have him start and get things finished up. I think I'm actually looking at a beta showing up here in the next couple of months. I'm kind of getting nervous and excited about it all at the same time. So
that's great. If you weren't nervous, I don't think you'd have done it right so far, right?
If you're not embarrassed to show that first version, you've launched too late, right?
That's right. That's
be embarrassed. There's no question about it. I've got plenty of embarrassment in there. So that's awesome. So this week, I thought we might chat a little bit about assets and liabilities in businesses. Now, that just sounds like an
I gotta go get a cup of coffee. I'll be right back.
Yeah, exactly. Like everybody in the audience just turned off the podcast right now going, oh my God, they're not going to do this. This sounds like a macro econ class. Or maybe it's micro econ. I was an engineering major. I didn't take those classes, so I don't remember which one is which. But anyway, you know, I was reading this article on, where was it? It was Business to Community, and it talked about time assets versus time debts. And it got me thinking about just, you know, assets and liabilities that we have to invest in our business in general, whether it's our time or whether it's our money, and how important that is over the course of the life of the business, whether you're just starting out or you're in full product market fit and you're going, you know, hella hard on growth, that all of this stuff becomes more and more critical as time goes on. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I see it in my business so far already, just getting it off the ground, making some of those really important decisions early on that probably will have a huge impact later on. And I can already see it as I look to grow. They're very different decisions later on. So, yep, absolutely.
Yeah. So the thing that really sort of made me want to talk about this week here is the story about Steve Jobs. Now, this is kind of a fun one. So everybody knows that Steve Jobs was sort of a quirky dude, but here was like one of the perfect examples of just exactly how quirky he really was. So he was famous for driving around, I believe it was a black Mercedes SL55 AMG, a car that I'm probably never going to drive myself. But anyway, it was his favorite car. He loved it. And of course, if you know anything about California driving and the DMV and the licensing, it just absolutely sucks to be anywhere around the DMV. Standing in line is like a multi-hour process. And Steve obviously was a man who greatly valued his time. So rather than deal with the DMV and getting license plates, I mean, there's a lot of ways that he could have solved this, but the interesting choice of solution that he made was that apparently there's a loophole in the California registration system. So when you buy a car, you have 6 months to register that car with the DMV and get new plates. Until then, you're literally allowed to drive around without a license plate, which is sort of bizarre, right? I thought you had to have something, but apparently you can just go completely license plateless. So Steve would go drive around in his Mercedes for 6 months. At the end of 6 months, he would go turn that in and get a brand new car from the dealer again and drive it around for the next 6 months. And he kept doing this for years, which allowed him to basically never have to step foot into the DMV to get a license plate. Isn't that a cool hack?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. And I think it's, I mean, having lived in California for a few years, it is just the most asinine process. Anything involved with the government there, it's just absolutely bizarre. But Yeah, I think Steve is, you know, kind of one of the early life hackers probably, and this is a good example of that. Yeah.
And it's obviously a very extreme example. I mean, nobody really is going to start adopting this on the wide basis because obviously Steve's economic means are a little different than most people, and being able to turn in a lease or turn in a leased car every 6 months is not something most people have the means to do. But Steve clearly valued his time so much that he found a way to avoid having to waste any kind of time whatsoever with the DMV, because I'm sure that they wouldn't allow an assistant, for example, to show up and register his car for him, that it had to be him as the owner of the car. And for him, you know, time was more than money. Time was his life. So, and obviously he was running out of a lot of time. And, you know, that kind of got me thinking about the things in our life that we do that either make more time for us or that take time away from us, and how incredibly important all of those decisions turn out to be when you're running a business. So you've got things like these time assets. Anything that you do with a time asset is something that turns around and gives you more time in the future. And then you've got time liabilities, where anything that you spend on a time liability will turn around and actually take more time away from you in the future as well. So clearly, if you're building a business, you want to be spending more time building time assets than you want to be building time liabilities. So you want to talk a little bit about what some time assets might be, Craig?
Yeah, I think an easy framework to think about this in is assets and liabilities. It's just kind of your personal net worth of time versus money, I guess, is really what it is. And so, yeah, some things that are assets, meaning that they give you more time or more time to work on a revenue or value producing part of your business, are things like process documents. So we talked last episode about something like Sweet Process, so a real efficient way of identifying processes and procedures and structures for your business, which allows you to do things like hiring virtual assistants. So relatively cheap, workforce in your business to have someone that might not be as skilled as they would be otherwise, but with those process documents allows them to do a job that otherwise you'd have to pay somebody much more for. Another thing is a knowledge base or a really solid FAQ. There's examples, and Dave, we should link to this in the show notes. There's actually a WordPress theme that acts as a knowledge base, and I'll have to look that up, but I think it's a great idea, and you really start building out either internal or customer-facing knowledge bases with something like that. And then the other asset would be qualification pages. So, you know, things like, you know, if you want to get in touch with me to speak at this, or a scheduling app like Calendly or Schedule Once or meetme.so, those things kind of, you know, they allow you to be more efficient with your time to get either the same amount or more done.
Indeed, indeed. And, you know, getting specifically on the FAQs there, since I'm a customer support guy, that's sort of near and dear to my heart. But the one thing that I found when I started putting together solid FAQs and actually invested a ton of time in building out my plugin documentation, two things I found out really came out of that, and also video tutorials as well, but that was sort of a third step to that. But number one, I found that my customer support got a lot more efficient, because then I could just grab a quick link out of my documentation, drop it into an email and say, you know what, our documentation covers that in great detail here, because I had invested all that time in it. And now all of a sudden later on, I'm saving a ton of time in my customer support interactions with people, because I could just point them to that. Or they'll say, oh, you know, I just don't understand how to use your administration options in there, and it's all so confusing. And I'm like, you know what? I have a great video tutorial that I can point you to right over here that walks you through all 10 tabs of that in great detail, telling you what things you need to pay attention to, what things you can ignore, what things are advanced, what things are basic. And they can just go through it on their own, and I don't have to, you know, handhold them on every single detail in email. And I also found that it turned into a really great training tool as well. So I've hired on, you know, individual support guys for the plugins. And the first thing that I do is, okay, here's the FAQs, here's the documentation, here's the video tutorials, here's the plugin. Yeah. Go through all of that. And when they come back, that now they are up to speed with everything that I've got available. And by getting familiar with that, they can actually leverage it when they're doing support as well. So those things are assets for them as well.
Yep. Yep. So I ran into this actually just this week. I was, so I've been outsourcing a bit of work for Podcast Motor, not just the editing and production audio engineering of the shows, but a fair amount of behind the scenes, internal and customer facing work. And I did two just Google Docs where I'd write out about a half a page of, hey, I want to do this and go to this link to kind of, this is where the database starts. But then from there, would just record a quick screenshot and Jing, and made it pretty universal, not just talking to this one person, but something I can use over and over again as I either bring more or different people on. And I hired this lady for $8 an hour. And she just rocked out and got me 30 links or 30 leads in about a day. So, I mean, it took me 15 minutes to put it together and then paid someone $8 for what would take me 2 hours of work to do. So it was awesome. It was awesome. And then it's 100% reproducible. Share that same Google Doc with someone else.
Absolutely. Now you can just keep pushing that button and say, all right, go do this again, go do this again, go do this again.
Yep. Yep. And on the other end of the spectrum, you know, that's both those examples are things that move our business forward from a time and efficiency standpoint, but then things that take away from it are the liabilities. And these are things that take time away from you or productivity away from us in the business. So things like email, probably social media I'll include in there too. Interviews that aren't aligned with our kind of social brand and platform, I would say. Bad work from contractors. This is not something I've run into, but Dave, it sounds like you've had this pain a handful of times with SupportVine recently, right?
Yes. Oh, God, there's nothing that can cost you more time than to invest some money and some time training a contractor, them going through your spec, providing the work, you getting the work back, and then realizing that it is 100% a pile of steaming crap.
Yeah.
And you basically either got to fix it yourself or hire somebody else. And so that low quality work really costs you time and money both. I mean, hugely so. It's painful. It's just painful every time I do that. So that's why hiring can become a very important time asset, because if you do it wrong, you're going to turn yourself around later on and get yourself a time liability out of it. So that's definitely one of those things. Like, a good hiring process pays in huge dividends if you do it right.
Probably one of the few things that's kind of a double whammy where it's time and money that you lose.
That's true. That's true. Because, for example, like email, you know, the more I answer email, well, that's just sending off stuff to other people who are going to turn around and respond. So that's going to generate more emails for me in the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not technically costing me additional money, you know, assuming that, you know, I'm working for free or that my salary is already paid for somehow, either way. But it is costing me, you know, a ton of time, and that's a huge suck. And, you know, if you're doing, you know, this is not a problem for you and I, but I'm sure it's a problem for guys like Tim Ferriss. Tim Ferriss probably gets hundreds of interview requests every week, and I'll bet he turns down about 99 of those because most of them are not aligned with what his business goals are. So obviously he's got to make sure that this isn't turning into a time suck where he's going and promoting something else, but he's not getting anything out of it himself. So
yeah. And I think, just as an aside, that the specificity of what you get yourself involved in is so important. And I think as we're getting started, Dave, we've probably seen this a little bit with the podcast, you can kind of flit from here to there to there. But at a point, and we're probably getting there pretty quickly with the show, I think you get hyper-focused on one very particular thing, and that's when you shine, whether it's in a business or a podcast or, you know, on a personal level. So I think as best we can do that, the better off everyone would be.
Totally agree. Totally agree. Yeah.
Which is tough, because then you think you're rat-holing yourself away to be one thing, but I don't think it ever ends up bad.
No, and I think your focus can change over time. You just got to make sure that when you are focused, you're focused on the thing that makes sense right now, and that it's giving you, you know, the most what you need in your business at that time. So.
Yep.
Well, so what are some ways that we can actually gain some time assets here? Because we know some things that are assets and we know some things are liabilities. How can I get more of them?
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, the one that stands out is process and system documentation, just because when you look at scaling either a software-based business or a service business, or even say e-commerce or something like that, it's all just a big process, and you're going to inject and take away people, and those people are of different backgrounds and knowledge bases and skill sets. But having a system to plug people into is the only way to effectively scale anything. So I think that would be the first one for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And since you mentioned it, you know, those process documents really turn around and become the basis for training new hires. So if you've got these great process documents, then you can turn around and use those to repeatedly hire and train people. So, you know, I've had to hire 3 different developers and 2 different customer support people. And every single time, you know, I've invested some time in either refining the documents I had or just writing the series of documents in the first place. And the first time, it always feels like such a grind, like, oh, please just don't let me. I just want to kill myself having to write this thing right now, because it just feels like I could just say it so much quicker. But then afterwards, when I have that and then I have to rehire somebody because something didn't work out, I'm immediately like going, yes, I have a document. I don't have to do this again. So it makes a huge, huge difference there.
Yeah.
And having other things like, you know, screencasts have been a tremendous benefit, just to be able to point to people, like an explainer video. I sort of have an explainer video for Business Directory plugin. And it just gives people a really good idea, because I kept answering the same questions over and over. Is Business Directory able to do this? Can I do this with Business Directory? Hey, you know, I'm looking to create this kind of a directory. Is that right for Business Directory plugin? And I'm like, okay. And after a while, I was like, yeah, just a video demonstration of this would make so much more sense. And now that I have that up there, I'm answering so many less of those questions. It just has made a huge difference.
Yep, yep.
Well, what else?
So the other, you know, I think that whole concept of systems and process and leading to training then leads to when the people that work in our business have ownership of that process and a bit of autonomy, then they go to improving it themselves. And that's probably where the real magic happens, is when someone who does customer support for one of your plugins says, hey, Dave, I know this is how you wanted to do it, but I've done it this way 37 times and this part of it kind of sucks ass. I'm going to start doing it this way. And they update the process document, they communicate it with the rest of the team, and then it's this continual self-improvement machine that you're not involved with at all, right? So that's 100% asset and no liability from your perspective. That's the ultimate, probably.
Yeah. I found that getting my developers involved in customer support, so they probably do about, it's hard to give an exact number on their mix because I'm not even sure. I've not really tracked it. But I think it's like 50% of their time is features and 50% is customer support. So that's pretty significant.
Yeah.
But because they're so involved in the customer support, they're very sensitive to when, you know, I don't have something documented correctly, the interface isn't quite right, they think that the options are a little wonky or that we've got too much on the interface or maybe not enough. And so they will oftentimes make suggestions to me and be like, you know, maybe we should simplify this because it seems like there's a lot of people having problems with it. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Great. Why don't you write the documentation for that? And then I'll post it on the site. And they do it. Boom, done. And everybody works less as a result of that. So that's a great, you know, time asset right there. Just getting some better documentation and getting everybody involved and making sure that you ingrain those opinions into future changes into the product that make everybody's life easier.
But you have to probably give yourself some more credit, though. I think you've created a culture within the company to say, hey, these things are okay. I want to hear these things from you. Even though I'm the one, you know, kind of the business owner or whatever, but that everyone's important, whether it's your developer or a customer support agent or a VA, to say, hey, everyone's got skin in this game. I want to hear from everybody, and an open culture at the company to allow that input. Otherwise, you would never get it.
Yeah, and it takes time to build that. You know, don't get me wrong. That did not happen the first year I had both of my guys hired, because I think they were a little like, well, I don't really know exactly where I stand in this here, and I don't know what opinions you want to hear. And, you know, I had to basically make it very clear. Look, you think something sucks, tell me it sucks. I'm okay with that, you know. And now they have no problem saying, you know, Dave, this is complete shit. Just let's do something a little bit better here.
Yeah.
So it's great. You know, that open dialogue makes for a huge difference in terms of the quality of the product that you produce.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've talked a lot about process and people, but since the show goes out to a lot of techie nerd engineers like us, what about talking about as we go through the stages of a company from just starting out to kind of gaining actual traction to longer stage or longer term and later stage companies, what about like some tools and some things other than process that we'll actually invest money in?
Oh, so you're talking about things like, you know, as you're making money in the business, what should I be investing in to improve the business? Not just from a time perspective, but, you know, what should I be doing with the actual revenue I get from the business? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, kind of reinvesting. As you reinvest, where should your money go?
Ah, well, I would definitely say that changes over time. Initially, it kind of feels like when you got that first dollar in your hand, you know, okay, maybe the second dollar in your hand, because the first dollar you put on the little frame in the wall, right?
Right.
So the second dollar that you have in your hand, you're like, what the hell do I do with this? And in general, you have to go back and invest as much as you possibly can in the fundamentals of the business, whether it's infrastructure or SaaS tools that you need or hiring people. Like right now with Podcast Motor, you're hiring VAs to do these things that you're trying to create processes around. And so the money that you're making from, you know, your first customers here has to be plowed back in to test that process out, to explore, you know, what is it going to take for me to make this reproducible? How can I create the system around that? How efficient is that system? And so for you, there's a lot of testing, and that testing involves paying people to try it out. So that investment is definitely going to be an ongoing thing here for a little while. And obviously, when you're doing that, you can't really pay yourself a salary. Not a market salary. If you pay yourself anything at all, I don't even remember how soon I started actually paying myself something from the plugins. It was probably not for a good, year and a half, maybe.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't making that much to start with. It was like $300 a month. So whatever I was making, I was paying off bills. So I was like, oh, hey, look, I can pay for my hosting. Oh, look, hey, I can pay for somebody to update the theme in the site. Oh, hey, look, I can buy this tool now. Oh, hey, look, I can, you know, that kind of stuff. And it was probably after a year of having built it up to where I was making, you know, around $3,000 a month or something like that. And I was making that on a fairly consistent basis. It was like, oh yeah, maybe I can actually take a little bit out here and we can go to Santa Fe, New Mexico for the weekend with my wife. You know, that sort of thing started happening, but it wasn't like, oh, hey, I'm going to go take this out and go to Vegas today. And then tomorrow I'm going to take this out and I'm going to go fly over to, you know, Bali or Bora Bora or the Seychelles or whatever the hell they are. No, it was not like that at all. And it certainly is still not like that now.
Yeah, you know, I think that I'm just getting Podcast Motor into, you know, some decent revenue, and you know, funny, then my first dollars went on the wall. My second dollars, I started thinking, you know, how can I spend this money? What should I do? And I did invest in people a fair amount. I did invest in some tools though. So, you know, I could have gone with MailChimp for the site, but I signed up for Drip, and it is just such a powerful tool. I went through some other tools that aren't nearly as powerful. And even for a service-based business like Podcast Motor, Drip was a good investment for me. The other thing that I probably will invest in here pretty quickly is, I don't want to say coaching, but some people to help me really get a marketing plan done. This is all pretty new to me on this scale and in this context. So I think asking for help and paying for help is, for me, a good use of money. That's something we hadn't really talked about before the show, Dave. But I think asking people for really, really focused, structured, you know, guidance is probably a good place to spend money for a lot of people, especially if it's not your wheelhouse.
Sure, sure. And if you didn't, like, for example, if let's say you're somebody who doesn't have a strong network, because I'm sure you can leverage a number of friends and talk with Ken or me, and you know, if there's somebody you wanted to talk to and we knew them, we could certainly hook you up. But let's say you don't have any of that stuff. I mean, you could go to someplace like clarity.fm and go just grab anybody who's on there, and for whatever their time is, $1 a minute or $2 a minute, you know, if you had some burning questions and wanted to talk to somebody who knew their stuff, I mean, you could easily spend some money and get that expertise back out in the form of a conversation.
Yep.
So,
yep. And this is something I probably will talk about later on, but I'm probably going to do this on a retainer basis going forward with somebody. I think it's, again, a good use of my time and my money. So kind of that spectrum, isn't it? Like, you have time and money. You can't just use one because they're very interlinked. So, you know, spend time to save money or spend money to get more time.
Right, right. And, you know, as your business is growing and you're kind of in the middle of things, you know, you're doing exactly that. So you're spending more money into the business in order to either grow the business or get yourself things that, you know, give you back some time. So maybe you're hiring somebody to do your support instead of doing all of the support yourself for a while, like I did with Business Directory, and, you know, invest in other things where, you know, you need to upscale your infrastructure. So at some point, I realized I needed some managed WordPress hosting and got on WP Engine because DreamHost was just sucking ass and I couldn't take it anymore. And, you know, things like that. But, you know, WP Engine is not cheap. You know, it comes at $99 a month for their 10 site plan. And that was way more than I was paying at DreamHost, even when you're paying it all up front. So you need to, you know, have some revenue to do that. But, you know, you're still investing that back into the business. And maybe you're taking more profits back out at that point as your revenue grows. So that's kind of where I think the plugins are at right now. I'm not paying myself a market salary by any means, and they're certainly not replacing my consulting income, but I'm closer. You know, I still get a regular benefit out of it, and I still pay all of the expenses in the business. I mean, I have a fairly significant amount of overhead with paying a bunch of people to work, you know, my developers and my support staff and things like that. But now that they're all covered, you know, there's actually something left for me. And that's kind of exciting. That's an exciting step to actually be at in the business. And, you know, that's when you really want to start pressing all the buttons so that you can get into your growth engine into a later stage here and find that product market fit to the point where you can do paid acquisition, where the cost to acquire a customer is so much less than the lifetime value you're getting out of them that you can just sit there and drop money into that ATM and out comes, you know, customers at the bottom that are very, very valuable to you. Now, with the plugins, that's not a place I'm able to get to because everything's a one-time sale, which is why I'm building up a SaaS business here. But, you know, with Podcast Motor, you are definitely on a road to hit that at some point, and I'm excited to see when you actually get there.
Yeah. Even though I'm in the early stage, I'm building things that are I'll say evergreen. So I'm paying for content every week. So I'm paying content for the blog, which the blog launched this week. So that's exciting. I think that's going to be a way to acquire customers. And that's probably a tough thing to measure at this point. I only have a handful of customers, but yeah. And I think over time you find those ways, the venues or avenues that you acquire customers in, and you just start focusing on one or two of them probably to really double down on paid acquisition or Twitter or Facebook or AdSense or content or whatever it is, to, like you said, put a dollar in one end and get $2 out the other end. And I, like you said, that probably only really exists in either a higher price single time purchase item or recurring revenue model, mm-hmm. where you can mm-hmm. say, I'm going to sell a $200 course. Yeah, you could probably put enough money into the front end to get it back out in that $200 course or in a, you know, something that someone's going to be a member of your product or service for 6 months at least. And that's what their lifetime value is.
The thing that drives me crazy as a business owner is that overarching all of this here, no matter what stage you're at, you're constantly worrying about cash flow and just, you know, how much money am I pulling in this month? What are my liabilities? How much do I have to pay them out? And am I going to get enough next month to cover that? Especially if you have highly variable cash flows. Certainly for the first few years of the plugins, you know, some months I would get just a couple of thousand and the next month I would get like seven after a release and I'd be really excited. And the next month it would crash down to three and you'd be like, ah,
Yep.
So you're trying to manage this thing overall, and after a while, and there's seasonal variations on top of that too, where, you know, you have the December dip and then the January freakout where everybody's like, oh my God, I haven't been doing work for a couple of months now. Ah, I better buy.
But we just got budget.
Yeah, exactly. Like everybody's budgets change and they're not thinking about the holidays anymore. They're like, woo, I better get back to work. I've, you know, finally sobered up after New Year's, right? And yeah, I mean, it's crazy. It's wacky. And sometimes the spikes are just such that it's this constant source of stress on you for the spikes and the dips and the cash flow in there. And Jesse Meekum had a great talk at MicroConf this year talking about just cash flow in general and how he, you know, spent a lot of time trying to manage his cash flow. And then at first it turned out to be a huge source of stress. And then later, as he became more and more profitable, that this turned into less and less of a concern. And it also kind of fit into Ted Pitt's talk. So Ted Pitt is from MoreAware, and his business partner Harry actually had an attendee talk the previous year, and both of them were very interesting talks. But Ted specifically focused on the SaaS metric that nobody really talks about, and it really ties back into what Jesse was talking about for cash flow, and it was really about profitability. For Jesse, he talked about it in terms of this thing called cash flow, but for Ted, it was about profit being his margin for error. Obviously, Ted's business is, for those of you who aren't aware of MoreAware, so MoreAware does cabinet software, software for cabinet makers. I shouldn't say cabinet software. That makes it imply like you're going to open up your cabinet drawers, pop in a USB, and be like, boop, 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 boop. All right, now make me dinner, you know?
It's like one of those old-time card, you know, computers where you stuck the card in, right?
Yeah, punch card thing and out comes. Yeah, it's like the 50s replicator. You stick a punch card in and out comes, you know, your three olive martini with a steak dinner, right? Something like that. No, nothing like that at all. No, they do, I believe, if I understand it correctly, it's software for people who make cabinets and are not cabinets, countertops, excuse me, software for countertops. And these guys, you know, are very dialed into this community here. That apparently it's a very complex thing to do the measurements and the management of the countertops. And these guys have that all dialed in, and it's taken them, you know, a decade to get their business going. And, you know, they make millions of dollars a year in revenue, and these guys have, you know, struggled with profitability. And for a long time, they weren't profitable. But when they finally started getting profitable, they, you know, were able to breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief, because now they had a margin for error because they were paying themselves market salaries, and they had something left over that they didn't necessarily have to invest back in the business again. But if something went wrong, they could draw from that, and, you know, the world wouldn't collapse around them. And I think that's one of our greatest fears about running a business is, you know, what the hell happens if I make a mistake and I don't have money in my bank account at the end of the month to be able to compensate for that mistake, right?
Yeah. Yep. And I think this is probably an extension of their personal financial theories and beliefs, right? I mean, I think these are probably pretty responsible and conservative financially, you know, in their personal lives. And that, I mean, that kind of brings to point something that I'm going through right now is, you know, getting into bookkeeping for my profits and expenses. You know, is in our family, my wife is by far the more conservative financially one. And so this actually came up in Founder Cafe this week was, you know, hey, my wife having trouble getting my spouse behind what I'm doing. I got that a little bit at the beginning, but then I asked her to do the books and gave her ownership, talking about ownership and process. And it's great. It's great. So she got it all set up. We're using Xero, and it's awesome for her to kind of have ownership of that part of the business. She feels like she's contributing something. But also for me, since I would be, you know, broke and homeless and snorting crack underneath a bridge somewhere if it wasn't for her, it's that built-in you know, she'll always have a rainy day fund for us in the business as well as personally, but she'll always make sure that I'm spending money efficiently and that, you know, we're kind of maximizing revenue where we can, although, you know, revenue is probably my job and kind of curtailing expenses is probably her job. it's working really well for us. So, you know, in your life and your partner, your spouse or your co-founder, whoever is best at that really should take ownership of it. And, you know, Dave, this reminds me a little bit of the live microconf talk that you guys did. With Breck Palumbo and Heaton talking about there's never two Batman, right? There's a Batman and a Robin. Right. And so, you know, that probably applies to a lot of different things. But in this sense, I think someone has to have ownership of it.
Oh, I agree.
You can't just say, hey, we'll do the books. I think one person really needs to say, hey, this is my world and I'm going to take ownership of it.
Right, right. So along those lines, I think there's another asset and liability that can come out of this that we haven't really talked about, and that is about spousal ownership. So that kind of fits into let's put it into the time category. So the guy in Founder Cafe was really struggling because his fiance didn't really understand why he was, you know, spending all his time doing entrepreneurial projects, and he had actually lost some money doing it to the tune of several thousand dollars. And that can be very stressful, especially if you're not, you know, if your spouse is not as invested in it as you are. I am extremely fortunate in that my wife's family actually has a small business of their own, and they've been running it for a couple of decades now. So she absolutely gets all of the stress of small business, and she has lived several roles. Like, she was the head of HR and the customer service at her business, and also worked in sales and was in buying. So she's seen lots of different aspects of this. And so she's absolutely sympathetic when I come back and tell her about things. And, you know, I say, okay, well, I want to do this and I want to invest this and share the numbers of the business, and she's totally on board with all of that. But I still do all the books on that, just because that's not something that she's interested in, or it's not even something that she would say she's very skilled at. But she still wants to know about it and still wants to have that trust that the business is headed in the right direction, and that, you know, it's growing to be an asset for our lives. And that it's something that, you know, we can both benefit from later on, not just now. And so she understands the balance that I'm striking between the consulting and the business itself, and building that up so that I don't have to do the consulting anymore. So that makes a huge difference to have that. That becomes a major asset to me, that my spouse understands and supports everything that I'm doing because of that transparency, so that I can get more time to make this business successful. And I think the guy in the Founder Cafe that was struggling with that, he's got a liability on his hands because he's not able to get that spousal support. So that's another form of an asset and a liability there, spousal support.
Man, that is a liability you can't just pay off.
Oh, no.
That thing, oh, no. I mean, there is – so we
that,
went through –
that might be a permanent liability,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
If you can't get them on board, you might be screwed.
You should just be an employee, I think. If you can't – I mean, if your spouse is not on board for this, this is a wild – I mean, this is going to be a wild ride.
Right, right.
You probably should think about – seriously think about making a significant change. So we went through the Dave Ramsey personal financial program a couple of years ago. And, you know, a lot of it I don't agree with, a lot of it I do agree with, but one of the funny things he says is, you know, women have the security gland and it's something that we can't relate to, but whenever money gets tight, their security gland gets really inflamed and you can't understand it because you're not a woman, you don't understand it. But, you know, so anyways, I don't know if that's entirely appropriate, but, you know, even as much as my wife has ownership and responsibility and takes pride in kind of managing a lot of the finances of our house, she also does get nervous. And I do think that's a gender thing for a big part. I mean, I think we all worry about money, but I think, you know, being moms, it's kind of a genetic thing for a lot of them. So, yeah. So I think going back to Ted's talk, one of the interesting things that it's probably the first time I've seen a hard number around it is revenue per employee as a key metric of profit. So, you know, he quotes a number of $250,000 per employee. And I think, Dave, you said they have about six employees, which makes sense with the kind of size of the company that they have. But that's the first time I've really seen a hard number around that. It probably varies with the type of business that you have, whether it's, you know, a product business or a SaaS business or a service business. But I think it's important to, all along the way through the growth of your company, have an idea of what that should be.
I've seen that number applied, but only on the scale of like larger companies. So I thought it was interesting that when Ted had presented his talk, that he specifically was putting it into the context of his business, you know, because he only has like 6 or 8 employees, whatever it was. So it wasn't something that I would have thought to apply to a business of that size, because usually they want to talk about like, you know, Apples and Instagrams and Facebooks, where they talk about revenue per employee when they've got thousands of employees laying around. But that was very different, and I thought that kind of put it into perspective there. So yeah, another one of the metrics that he had actually mentioned there was profit margins that you're getting across, you know, your business as a whole or individual sales. And he was saying that, you know, you want to shoot for something that's more than about 30%, which, you know, I can see that if you're shrinking below 30%, you know, you're going to be struggling. You know, if you don't have a lot of cash in the bank every month, those profit margins are going to start to make or break your bank account, and it's going to cause a lot of stress and friction in your company.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. That's and I think that's that would apply to any business, I would think, a number like 30%, because everyone has overhead, whether it's, you know, engineering or tech support for a product, or people that are behind a service-based business, or, you know, whatever the combination of both of those ends up being for a lot of companies these days. So I think 30% at least is a good one to shoot for. And I've even seen numbers like that in e-commerce, you know, up on the top end, they say something like 50%, but then you start factoring in all of the internal costs of it. So I think a 30% number is pretty fair.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to revenue per employee, and I don't know what your experience was when you worked for big companies, but at my current employer, it's $1.5 million.
Whoa.
Per employee. Yep.
Wow. That's a sizable chunk of revenue.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's interesting. I mean, it's just a very, very different scale. But, you know, these are big unit steps we talk about, right? That if you bring someone from, you know, your company from 6 to 7 people, you got to grow that thing $300,000. That's a big chunk on a $2 million company.
Right. I mean, it makes your hiring decisions that much more critical, and you want to be that much more careful on it and create those time assets as well as business assets.
Yeah. You know? Yep, mm-hmm. For sure.
But I'll tell you what my favorite metric of all from Ted's talk was, and that was quality of life. And of course, you know, as a small business guy and a self-funded bootstrapper, sorry, Heaton. Yeah, every time I say that term bootstrapper, I just, you know, I expect that Heaton's out there cringing somewhere, just wanting to slap me. I don't know. Anyway, but the quality of life metric is so important to me. Like, that's the one thing I want to optimize for more than anything. So if I'm doing something in my business and it's not ultimately pushing me towards a quality of life thing, then, you know, I'm going to have to put that in the liability category, that this is definitely not something that's furthering the business. And, you know, there's some things that I originally bought and were working with. I had a college registration site, kept it going for a long time. And then at some point I'm like, I'm pumping a lot of time and energy and money into this thing, and the profit's not coming out on the other side. And, you know, I could pump more time and more energy and maybe get it to go a little bit more, but it's distracting me from my other businesses. It's taking me extra time on top of the things I already have to run. So it was a quality of life thing for me. I looked at that and I'm like, if I keep doing this, this is going to actually make my life worse. So I've got to just back off and say, screw this.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think we're kidding ourselves if any of us say this is not the only reason we're here, right?
Sure.
I think this is not the easy way to do it, but it ultimately, hopefully.
There's something wrong with us. That's what Jason Cohen said at Microcom.
Yeah.
There has to be something wrong with us as entrepreneurs. And that's probably true. It is absolutely true. We are definitely not wired like folks that want to work at a company for 50 years.
But you have the vision of saying, if I'm smart and if I work hard and strategically, I can achieve this asset and liability balance pretty easily, relatively to working for 50 years and then, quote, retiring, to get to that sweet spot in your life where you're time and money assets for your work-life balance outweigh the liabilities. I can already see the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm sure you can do your further along the road than I am, but I already see the light at the end of the tunnel. And it's something, you know, something else that kind of occurred to me, Dave, is we're both temporarily doing some things that are sort of changing the long-term balance of what we'll have in terms of assets and liabilities. And we both are doing things that are in the near term providing an influx of cash into our lives for, you know, kind of our professional lives to support our, you know, bootstrap or self-funded businesses long-term. And I think that's okay. I mean, I look at, you know, we're both traveling for work right now, and that's on a very finite timeline for both of us probably. And that's okay to say, hey, for the next year, heads down, make as much money as we can with, you know, keeping some sort of balance, but because we're going to kind of say cash that in at a point later to invest in the business and scale it up to create, you know, change it from money assets to business assets that will then make money for us on our own terms.
Right, right. Just a question of what you want to invest in.
Yep, yep. Mm-hmm. So to wrap it up a little bit in terms of summary, you know, when thinking about assets versus liabilities, to maximize anything that gives you more time and the potential to make more money in your business. So these are things like process documents and systems, hiring people at below market wage, a lot of knowledge and FAQs built into the internal and customer-facing part of your business, as well as things that just let you be more efficient. And these are probably tools, things that allow you to be more efficient working in your business.
Right.
And then on the liabilities end, you know, these are things like email, social media, doing podcast interviews that aren't aligned with your overall goal. And then, unfortunately, we all probably have to face getting low-quality work for those people that work for us. But, yeah, I mean, as much as we can optimize increasing the assets and minimizing the liabilities, or at least knowing where we stand with those, then that sort of business, you know, cash flow statement that we see evolving over time should be in good standing.
Indeed. And if nothing else, then we can all start wearing black turtlenecks and driving Mercedes SL55s and avoiding the California DMV. That's my takeaway for the show for the week anyway.
I like it. I like it. All right. So, one other thing. We since we had our first voicemail last week, we're loading SpeakPipe on the website. So you can leave us a voicemail right on the website. So at the bottom of each post, so the show notes for this post will be, this episode will be at roguestartups.com/episode12. You can leave us a voicemail right in the post there. So just click on the button, leave us a voicemail, and we'll play it on the next episode. So we hope to hear from you.
Ooh, shiny.
Yep. All right. Well, Dave, thanks so much for hopping on. We'll talk again next week.
All right. Sounds good. Until next week.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.